Are you ready for the AI invasion? No, seriously, artificial intelligence will affect educators sooner or later. You might already have been affected. And so, before we roll out our season 11 premiere next week, I wanted to share a conversation on the potential and the ethical implications of AI in education. My name is Tim Villegas with the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education, and you are listening to Think Inclusive, our podcast that aims to build bridges between families, educators, and disability justice advocates to create a shared understanding of inclusive education and what it looks like in the real world. Michael Bohl is a technology coach and educator who specializes in AI and its applications in education. He has a background in technology and has been providing professional learning experiences for educators on AI. Michael and I discuss the misconceptions about AI in education and how it can be used to benefit students. He emphasizes the need for educators to understand AI and its capabilities in order to create a positive narrative around its use. Michael also explores the potential of AI in personalized learning and supporting students with disabilities. I think you are going to find this conversation very interesting. Also, make sure to listen to the end of the conversation. I'm previewing a new segment for season 11 called The Mystery Question. Don't miss it. After a short break, my interview with Michael Bohl.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Michael Bohl, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Tim, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We aren't doing video, but if you were to see us, Michael is wearing a USC hat and I'm wearing a Dodgers hat. Yet neither of us live in California.
Yeah, that is a little bit awkward, isn't it? So it almost makes it worth showing the video, but you know, I have a great face for radio, I've been told. So we'll just leave it at that.
That's fine. Michael, I invited you on because I want to talk about AI, but some people may be wondering, what's your connection to AI?
Well, I actually invented it. That's now actually a big secret. And so now it's out on the podcast world. No, that's
surprise,
not true at all, of course.
Surprise, yeah. Everyone.
So my background is mostly as a nerd, and that evolved into a technology coach. And then as a technology coach, you're like, hey, you know, you get to check out all the new things that come along and actually get paid for it. And so I do professional development nowadays for teachers. And so I'm always looking for like new things to learn about, and AI just jumped right into the forefront because of so much stress and concern and worry about it, especially after COVID, that suddenly teachers are going to be less relevant than they even were then. And that's the end of the world. The kids are just going to cheat and on and on and on. And I guess all those things could be true if we're not careful, but that's probably what incentivized me to check it out. I just want to be able to share it with other educators so that they can learn it, understand it, and then create and begin that narrative of how we're all going to use it.
So you provide professional learning experiences for educators, and AI is something that you talk about. So what are some misconceptions about AI that educators should know?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think it's so new now that the concerns they have might become the reality. Maybe it's going to take over the world, and maybe it's going to decide that we all are going to make paperclips, and it's just going to force us into indentured servitude. Who knows? That might happen. I guess the misconceptions can be that students will only use it to cheat, that it's going to revolutionize education in a negative way only. And that's where it's important now to be having these early conversations to help us understand how it works and how we can revolutionize AI to be something that's going to benefit us, that's going to be a positive to education. I mean, you can imagine a virtual tutor that we would all have. And so a student, regardless of their ability, has this virtual tutor that's helping them along, that is there by their side to assist them. So they have, if you're in a classroom of 30, you have one teacher and then 30 instructional aides right there helping. But in order to make that happen, we're going to have to create the structures and change our lessons to be able to take advantage of that. And that's where we're in this flux right now, this disruptive, potentially extremely disruptive flux, where we don't know how it's going to go. Maybe we're not clear of how to make it happen in a way that we want to. And then that's where the fear starts to take over. Plus all the headlines, you know, that's the end of the world. All that kind of stuff.
There's one I just read yesterday about how AI is going to be writing news for us. So
yes. Yeah. I read that too. I just read that this morning. Yeah. Like New York Times and NPR and others are going to have it help generate news stories. And yeah. You know, I'll take my writing and I'll put it in there and I'll say, improve this. And it's a lot better when it comes out. So I'm not a horrific writer, but I wouldn't consider myself an excellent one. But after, you know, AI, I'm pretty good.
Well, yeah. So I guess we're all going to become great writers. I have for years, since I was even in the classroom, I subscribed to this service called Grammarly.
I'm sure you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. And it immediately made me a better writer. It used to just do grammar. Now there's like these AI tools built into the application. So you can like write a paragraph and then highlight it and be like, shorten it or improve it or whatever. And it's just become so much easier to write. And that's something, I mean, that's my job. Like my job is communications. Anything that's going to help me do that better and faster, I feel like is a win.
Right. I mean, AI in its current form is perfect for helping those of us that kind of already learned how to write, have gone through it, you know, through college or even earlier than that. And we're ready just to be better at it. And then the horrifying feeling or worry or concern is that what about those that are still in the process of learning? Are they just going to put it in and then that's just going to remove all the learning? And that is definitely possible today. Students can do that right away today.
Yeah.
So, and if you're a teacher who gives a lot of homework and has kids doing stuff at home and aren't creating those structures in class where they do it step by step, that's going to happen. And the incentives are huge. So, you know, if I'm a high school student and I want to get into a good university, I'm going to use those sorts of things. Those are, if I want to get good grades, my incentives are to get a good grade now so I can have success later, whatever that might mean. But that's how I'm going to be thinking or feeling. Or if I'm busy or this or that, I'm as a student, I have massive incentives to use AI to help me.
Do you see a good parallel to AI as the calculator? Because I had a conversation recently with someone and he was saying how like the calculator was quote unquote dangerous when it first became popular and people were using it so often because the idea was, well, kids aren't going to learn math. Now we have calculators on our phones, like pretty much.
So, or a watch. Yeah.
Or a watch. Yeah. Yeah. Or Alexa.
Yeah.
Right.
I had a calculator watch before there was, you know, in the old days.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
My nerd credentials here, but it was hard to hide that from the teacher.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Is that a good comp?
Kind of. I mean, maybe to help us feel a little bit better, but that was an isolated incident for a specific course. And so for teachers, it wasn't super difficult to change in order to accommodate it. So, I mean, it's been a healthy change in that now we talk more about the structure of math, the algorithms of math that go into it, and understanding the concept of math. And then we use those tools to assist us as we go down that path. But with AI, it kind of just does everything. It's such a wide scale, with super easy access, and we're on the laptops all the time already, so it's hard to tell whether students are using AI or not. So if we follow the model we use for the calculator, sure, I think it's going to be great. But again, there's going to be a lot of disruption initially as people just start using things, and the teachers have to come to understand how it all works. It's pretty easy to understand a calculator. It's not so easy just to understand AI without jumping into it a bit.
Well, that's a good point. So what is the best way to understand what AI can and can't do at this point?
Well, the first thing to do is just get an account. So you can use ChatGPT. Google has their version. Microsoft has their versions. Those are probably the main three that you would use, and they have different levels of quality in them. Mm-hmm. And then just start asking questions. So like for me, a lot of it's brainstorming. So come up with 10 names for this course, or come up, if I'm going to interview Tim, if it knows something about you, if you're out on the internet a bit, say, you know, research Tim and come up with 5 questions that I should ask him. So in that way, it's going to make me a lot smarter. And those sorts of things then help me understand the ability of ChatGPT. And then it's like, well, let's see, I need to do a lesson on dinosaurs. So give me a lesson for a second grader on dinosaurs, and it'll bring all that up. But oh, make sure you incorporate basketball into it because we're doing a basketball unit. Or in sort of the reverse of that is, let's say I'm a PE teacher and I want to have a cool game that involves dinosaurs because I know the second grade teacher is teaching that. It'll come up with a bunch of great ideas for it. And if I don't like those ideas, I'll just say, hey, come up with 10 more. And it'll just keep generating more and more ideas. And as you start to get into it and start to use it more, you start to realize that the power that it has. And you just have to think of it as like, what am I doing today right now? Okay, maybe I can get AI to help me with that. And often that answer is yet. And often the responses are quite delightful. So, and perhaps maybe the biggest beneficiaries of this are going to be elementary school teachers, where students aren't so much on their laptops and don't really have a reason to use AI. They're going to use it to be super creative in everything that they do.
What about things that, have you run up into things like that maybe AI can't do right now, that maybe people think that it can do? I don't know if that question makes sense.
It does. So one of the issues with AI, because it's generative AI, meaning it doesn't just go out and research the internet and produce the result. It generates content based on these massive algorithms that help it understand how humans work and how human language works. So it doesn't really know what it's saying, as far as we know. But, so maybe it does. And it's just fooling us. I'm not sure yet. So if it it'll just start making stuff up if it doesn't have a reference point from which it started the beginning giving to the answer. So there's that concern when you start asking it factual questions, you then have to fact check it, which is a huge pain. When you ask it creative questions, like come up with this lesson plan, then you're like, yes, I like that creative idea, or I don't. So on the factual side, you definitely are going to hit a wall there. And also, if you're ready to generate images, it's really not that good at it. Generating music, it's okay. But these are all things that are going to get a lot better over time.
Right, right.
There's huge incentives to produce something that will.
Are you familiar with the, there is these AI generated videos. I forget the name of the it was on YouTube and TikTok and all that. These like a Star Wars movie or Lord of the Rings made in the style of a Wes Anderson film. Did you ever see those?
No, but I can imagine.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. How was it?
Fantastic. And in fact, since we're talking about it, we'll go ahead and put it some links into the notes. I love a good Wes Anderson film. And mm-hmm. And I also happen to love Star Wars. So when that first one came out, I was like, oh my gosh, how did they do this? And then I realized, oh, it was AI. Now I couldn't tell you how that works, but I know that it does. I feel like we're relatively at the beginning of this whole thing. So I can't imagine what it's going to look like in even, you know, 1 or 2 years, let alone 10 years.
I think, you know, just on the movie aspect, so I used to teach a film class that I'll be able to tell, let's say iMovie, make this film look like a Wes Anderson film. And it would do all the cuts and the music and whatever to look like that film. And then I guess as a director and artist, I can decide whether I like that or not, and or I can decide which artist I want it to represent. So when you think about editing that's going to come along as an editor or a director, I'm going to have those options to just instantly convert something to see what I like, and then maybe I can use that to for my own creative endeavors.
Yeah.
So those things are, yeah, definitely happy. And then you hear about things where you'll star in the movie. So it'll take a likeness of you and put you as one of the characters in the back or something like that. In fact, I was listening, just before I came on today, I was listening to a podcast called Hard Fork. That's great for a lot of AI stuff. They're from the New York Times. And they were talking about a Netflix show that does a deep fake. And so it's one of those reality shows where they go in and then they watch their spouse cheating. And it's actually a deep fake of them cheating.
Oh my
but they're not
gosh.
Told about this in advance, so they can get all the reactions and all that. So I think, you know, what a horrifying idea for a show, but
that is, and it's that's just like a Black Mirror episode, is what
it is. Yeah, in fact, Black Mirror is probably one of the best ways to understand AI. It's to watch a lot of those shows.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh yeah. I think one of the things that jumps out at me when I am thinking about how people use AI, and especially about how I use it, is I think there's a misconception that you can just ask it a question or ask it to generate something, especially for an assignment or for, you know, even for your job. And then you copy and you paste and that's it. Like, I'm done.
Right.
Like, it just took 10 seconds. But since I've been interacting with AI and a number of different tools, I've really not done that with hardly anything, except it's just more of like a first draft.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like what you were saying, you know, create 10 titles, you know, for this course, or 10 titles for this blog article I'm writing, or, help me summarize the contents of this, podcast interview. And then you take that draft, and like the director that creates the AI movie, they decide what they want to keep and what they don't want to keep.
Sure.
Right.
In addition to that, there's all the prompt engineering around it. So if you get that first result, you're like, it's too long. So you tell it to make it, because it understands what it just wrote. So make it shorter, make it punchier, make it happier, make it sadder. One examples I use for a good prompt specifically is, let's say there's the Common App for people who are going to college. You have to write that essay. And you just write out, answer the Common App question. I didn't even know what it was, but ChatGPT does, and reference Elmo in it. Make sure you mention that I was captain of the volleyball team, that I worked with a lot of individuals with diverse needs, and that I worked at an ice cream shop with individuals like that, and I have a massive doll collection. And so it'll intertwine all that into a pretty good essay that pops out. Now, that's just Chat 3.5. If you want to use ChatGPT 4.0, which you have to pay $20 a month for, it's going to be even better. And then from there, you're like, wow, this is a pretty good essay. Now I'll just modify it. So that's right. Using that, you know, using the prompt to get the better answer out the gate, or just to encourage it as you go along at the end after you see it to make it better.
So is that cheating, Michael?
I think it's cheating if you don't cite it.
So let's say, for instance, I'm going to take your example. You're writing a college essay, right?
Yeah. Especially the one I gave where it kicks out a good one in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. You get a pretty good first draft, but you modify it and you're like, okay, yeah, I wouldn't use that word. I would use this word. I'm going to add maybe another sentence or two, I'm pretty much going to use, you know, 75-80% of what it spit out. And I load it in the Common App and I hit submit, but I do not say that it was created by ChatGPT or Bard or, you know, Bing or whatever. So how do we feel about that? That seems like an ethical thing. No,
I think we can sort of rephrase or reframe the question. What if, Tim, I asked you, hey, write me an essay, and here's the prompt I want, and here's the sort of things I want you to include, and you wrote it, and you gave it to me, and then I modified it, but kept 70-80%. Would I be a misrepresentation of my writing? I think the answer is yes, because basically Tim wrote it, I modified it, but it's not something that I could have written at that level on my own. So it doesn't represent who I am as a student and my potential, at least as an essay writer. So, but back to incentives, the incentive is massive for me to turn in the best essay possible, because I want to get into whatever that university is, and I want to get the scholarship or that scholarship. So that's where, because the incentive is so high to misrepresent yourself, we're going to have to change the structures you're probably just gonna have to get rid of the essays, because I'm sure all those people reading it now, if they see a good one, they doubt whether it's legitimate or not. There's always gonna be that nagging feeling. And like, I hate reading stuff that I know is from ChatGPT, and I'm just like, I don't like it now, because before I was getting to know somebody, now I'm just like reading words on a page. So yes, I do think there's a serious ethical issue there. And I don't think we're going to get rid of that if we had the incentives that force us in some way, students, to cheat. I could say, hey, be a better person and not get into, I'll say USC instead of UCLA, or be a not as good a person and get into USC. Like, what are they going to decide? They're going to say, I'm going to do it.
Right, right. So do you think this is kind of like the major problem that we're going to have with AI? And, you know, just like,
yeah.
How do we cite this? Is it ethical to use it, you know, and say that we wrote it? I mean, I wrote the prompt, you know what I mean? So right. I don't know.
It's not ethical to use it, but students are going to use it. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's ethical as long as you cite it, but you can't cite a friend or AI for your essay. It has to be your own original work. So how do we then create classroom situations where students are assisted as they go rather than told, go write this in the end? Mm. I mean, I know they're assisted along the way, but ultimately, unless it's broken down into pieces that are checked along the way, or we just maybe get rid of homework, you're going to get a lot of this, and that's not going to change. You can give them the long moral lectures that you want, and that'll help somewhat. So sure, let's do that. That's healthy for society to frame or put guardrails on what's appropriate and inappropriate behavior. That's what we're supposed to do as teachers. But if they, again, back, I keep saying incentives again, but again, the benefit of it far outweighs the moral bad feelings they have, they'll do it. That's just human nature.
As far as how we can use AI to support learners with disabilities, or have you put much thought into how AI could support those particular learners?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm preparing to develop a course specifically using UDL model for helping mm-hmm. students all across the board. Currently, you can take your writing and you can put it in and ask AI specifically to look for what sort of voice comes through here, or look for grammatical mistakes, or give me suggestions for sentence structure improvements. And so that'll help everybody regardless. Those are the things that are possible now, but you kind of have to do it on your own. Now, there are companies that are starting to come out with things that'll structure that a little bit better for you. And so essentially the app will do the prompt engineering for you, so you don't have to think about what to ask. KhanMigo is coming out from SalKhan, from Khan Academy. And that the idea behind that is that it's a tutor along the way with you. So as you're struggling, it just pushes you and asks you questions, and you ask questions back, and it helps you. And then you spit out your final product, but you've been assisted along the way. And then the instructor knows that you went through there, and that app is designed to help you. And it isn't really designed to help you cheat. It's designed to help you do better. And then whatever work result comes out is the work that's, it's your own work with help, you know, incredible help sitting right next to you. Again, back to that example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think that's what's going to happen. I want to research this more specifically, like different use cases across different types of learners, but the potential there is just massive.
Yeah. I like how you frame that, because number one, we have to change what kinds of things we're expecting our learners to do. Like if it's write an 500 word essay on the topic of the Civil War, and that's all the instructions they're given, that could be a problem. But if you are already expecting some baked in help, whether it's through AI or something else, then that seems like it's a more helpful assignment.
And then AI will help figure out where the student is. So I have 30 students in the classroom with different learning needs. I probably don't know specifically what the different learning needs are for all those students. If it's a math class, and let's say it's one that needs more support, I know I have a bunch of students who need more support in math, but I don't really know this kid needs here with addition, this one's subtraction, and so I can't modify and get real granular as far as what their needs are. And AI can do that, and will be much better at doing that in the future.
Yeah, and the second thing I wanted to say was, you mentioned, is it KhanMigo? Did I say that right? The more, I'm imagining that this particular, I'm not sure what you call it, program assistance, something like that. And then you're going to have additional ones to choose from. that could potentially bring this idea of personalized learning a little bit further into mainstream of education.
Which we've talked about personalized learning. I think we all agree it's great, but it's almost impossible to scale. We can't just yell at the teacher and say, you need to work harder and smarter and make it happen. This could be potentially the way to, yes, make it happen at scale, where you push a button that says, go out and assess these students and figure out where they're at and help them along the way. And then you just are monitoring and managing all of that and figuring out what's working and what's not working. And then, you know, to have like a dashboard of knowing where all my students are and what their ability levels are at. And then I can create fun games for the whole class to go that might benefit 10 students specifically, that, you know, because I do it in the form of a song and I know those 10 are going to benefit and the other 20 are like, this is fun, we're singing, you know. So I'm creating community at the same time. There's all these things that can happen once I have that data and that information. And I think that's exciting, those possibilities for teachers. How fun would that be to know how your students all learn and then to be able to come up with a bunch of creative ideas to help them? That would be very satisfying.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So something came to mind when you were talking about the personalized learning and this program or application, knowing the students enough to offer suggestions either to the teacher or to the student. That's already happening right now with the data we give to social media companies. I was just thinking about that. It's a different application, but I'm scrolling through Facebook or Instagram and I get ads for audio and video editing software or like musical instruments, or it's like it
I
knows
keep getting
me.
Asked on how to be a better husband. That's I think my wife Lori's been on there or something, but yeah.
I don't remember. I think it was just a Meta thing. I remember taking a survey and it was like asking me if I liked personalized ads or not. And I have this like really mixed reaction to it, because on one hand I actually like that. I get to see ads for audio equipment instead of seeing ads for like something I don't want. But on the other hand, I'm like, I don't really like that it knows me. You know what I mean?
So I mean, it's saying, look, we're going to collect all this data on you and we're going to know you no matter what. By the way, do you want personalized ads that kind of demonstrate that we know you, or do you just want us to not really let you know that we really know you and we'll be more subtle? So you might as well say yes, because it's not like they're going to turn the switch off. They're just going to modify what
that
you see
is
to
make
you comfortable, where I might have said yes and I get all the ads that I want anyways. So yeah, but, I mean, but their goals are to make money and to compete for your attention and get you addicted to screen time and to constantly be picking up your device. That's their whole goal and incentives behind everything they do. And that's why outrage, for example, just releases like cortisol into your system when you see it, that keeps you on those things. But hopefully as educators, that's not our goal. Our goal is to make you the best person you can be and be the most effective learner that you can be wherever you are at. And so we have a much more noble goal. But so collecting that same data in a large aggregate scale and then be able to scale it to multiple, let's say a middle school, where I can scale that across 5 or 6 different teachers, like that is awesome.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
Instead of serving up ads, I serve up useful things for them to learn.
Do you see a time in the future where educators could, based on their student profiles, be able to schedule out like a whole year's worth of lessons or curriculum?
Hopefully not, because even if I've been with a student for a month, I don't really know what they're going to be like in 6 months. So I think I would have goals of where I want students to get to based on whatever their abilities are or whatever their grade level is. And then artificial intelligence is going to help prompt along the way to get to that. It's going to assist along the way to get to that point. So let's say music class, for example. So maybe I'm terrible at eighth notes. And so AI can listen to my playing and then produce exercises for me to help me along the way until it gets better, and then I'll move on to something else. And because it's AI, it's pretty creative, it can maybe use songs that are fun for me. So I'm going to learn things in a way that I enjoy, but at the same time, I'm picking up these skills that I needed. And so that's so much better than a band teacher who has 150 students in front of them doing the same sort of music for everybody, probably getting a lot of people, maybe 50, 60% of the class, but you still have that other 40% that needs more specific help. And there's just, they can't scale that, but AI can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to change how schools are run, because I'm thinking about the reason I asked about the planning a whole year is we're recording this in the summer of 2023, but you have educators at home or in pre-planning, and they're scheduling out their year. Okay. It's September and we're going to be talking about this, and it's October and we're going to be talking about this. They may not have all of the everything planned down to the minute, but there's basic structures. But what I'm hearing you say is that maybe we won't need to do that. Maybe it'll be more responsive to the needs of the students.
I think it can be. The question is whether we do that. So if I'm a math student and we're learning about quadratic equations and we learn about that just for April, and it comes May and I'm like, I still haven't learned it. Oh, tough luck. On we go to the next thing. Like, you're just going to have to fall behind. Right. Or you got to work harder, or let's get you six more tutors at home and add to the stress levels you already have. So if we can, as educators, and not maybe individually, but as a system, understand that if we were to leverage something like this, then we can individualize back to that personal learning so that we could create mastery. You know, the goal of actually mastery of learning something. And then students might be, this is stuff that Khan Academy's learned, that students might not be so great at a certain thing like quadratic equations, but they might be much faster somewhere else and they can catch back up. So sometimes you just need more time in one area and less time in another. So instead of wasting time, because look, I get it, can I just move on? I just got to hang with the whole class. And so I think we're going to have to divorce ourselves essentially with that whole idea of we do a certain thing in April, a certain thing in May. And we can do it by topic. Sure, like we're going to cover the Civil War during May, and then we do whatever sort of learning we want. But AI could help us if we were learning euphemisms or some sort of writing conventions, you know, the month before when we were studying this, say, the Revolutionary War. Why can't we just carry that on into the Civil War? But not everything can be individual all the time. We also have to come together as groups and do things. So we don't want kids just sitting at their screen with the AI nagging them all the time on how to do something. We want to, you know, work cohesively as a group as well and understand our role in society. So,
yeah.
It's going to be a big disruption. Like, we won't get it right in the beginning, for sure. We're going to make a lot of mistakes. If we can just look at it that way, like, hey, we're going to do it. We're going to get, I would like to say, a minimum viable product that's good enough, with the assumption that it's not actually going to be good enough. And that as people use it, we're going to learn and we're going to change it and improve it along the way. But you can get backlashes from that, because people get a lot of fear from that. And they'll say, I just want to go back to basics, which is something I understood. But it's kind of like, can't we just turn the internet off? Okay. No, you can't, because as soon as they leave.
No.
Same with blocking AI to school. Sure, go ahead and block it. Students will get around it. Maybe not at school, but they'll do it at home when they have no guidance.
Oh, so, So I subscribe to Education Week, and I'm going to show you this headline. I'm going to have to describe it. So do you see this? It's the AI invasion.
Yeah. There you go. Clickbait right there. On actual paper.
On actual paper.
Made you
want to
read it. You know, I could use ChatGPT right now and come up with at least 15 better title ideas than that one. I can't believe they didn't. Or if that's the best one they came up with, forget it.
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't read the article yet. So, the AI invasion, schools weigh benefits and drawbacks of artificial intelligence.
Yeah. They'll just talk about fears on you know.
I'm sure.
Half people are excited, half are afraid. And then give a quick summary in the end about what we should do.
Right, right. Maybe AI wrote it. You never know.
Probably. Maybe AI is generating that paper now.
Sorry to disparage the journalists at Education Week, but
it's not so much that they would use it so much, is that later they're afraid that some AI is going to write it instead and not need them. And they say with AI, like, there's going to be teachers or lawyers who use AI, and there's going to be teachers who, and lawyers who don't use AI, and they're all going to be unemployed.
We've talked a lot about benefits and the challenges of AI and how AI can be useful to learners with disabilities or all learners. You know, we have a lot of educators that listen. What's a big takeaway that you'd want for them as they listen to this conversation?
I think when you look at AI, the best thing you can do is to learn it and start using it. Then find a cohort of people who are in the same situation and are the type of people that, look, let's create ways to use this to benefit us. Let's help create that narrative and help education move along and use it in a positive and beneficial way. But let's know that in the beginning, we're going to be terrible at it, and it's going to do things we don't want it to do, and kids are going to use it in ways we don't want them to use it. So we just have to be ready for that and be prepared for that and see that as normal, and then we're going to adjust as we go forward. And if we don't have that sort of open-minded concept or philosophy that in our mind as we do it, then we're going to maybe succumb to fears and try and stop and block things, and then it's going to move forward without our guidance. So let's guide it rather than letting it go on its own.
Yeah, that... having an open mind, I think, is so important, because the things that we fear and the things that we try to stop just end up having a life of their own.
Yeah. It's kind of like if there's a flood coming slowly, it's like, well, maybe we ought to build a boat or do something to help our students by raising the height of the school or whatever. But it's a slow trickle in, and you're like, but that's going to change how I teach, and that's going to change how I do my classroom. Yes, yes, it is. But that water's still coming. So what are you going to do? You can resist it and be fearful of it for a while, ignore it, but at the end, it's going to get you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Right. This has been a really fascinating conversation, Michael. I do have one more question for you if you're up for it. So this season of Think Inclusive, I've been doing something called a mystery question. Are you up for a mystery question?
Oh, of course. I can't say no.
Yeah, because if you...
I don't want to be that guest.
No one said no yet, Michael.
Then maybe I should, just so I'll be... Let me get my ChatGPT open here.
No, no. So I have a stack of cards here, and they're all prompt cards, and I'm going to select a card, and we'll both answer the question.
Okay,
so here we go. The question for today is... I don't know if I like this question, but
that's a good setup.
But then, would you accept a fatal mission in exchange for a lifetime support for your family? This is awful. This is an awful question. This is the worst question I've had so far. So, Michael, congratulations.
You're welcome. No, I wouldn't, because I'm hopeful, maybe arrogant enough to think that I can help my family survive and do well going into the future, so I don't need to kill myself to do it.
Yeah, I don't like this question. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I would not accept a fatal mission in exchange for a lifetime of support. So there you go, all of you You kidnappers out there, don't even try it, okay?
That's
don't
right.
even try it. Man, that was awful. I don't like that one at all.
Might have to go through them next time.
I know. Well,
I was going to chat GPT to get it, but I couldn't log in time. So I wonder what it would have said. It wouldn't have given a very creative answer for that one, unfortunately.
No. Well, I wonder if, let me see if I'm going to pull up chat GPT right now. And then I'm going to say, write a random, I don't know if I'm not very good at prompt engineering. So write a
on
question,
the fly, yeah.
Write a question to ask my podcast guest. Let's see what it comes up with. What has been the most profound or transformative moment in your life, and how did it shape the person you are today? That's what ChatGPT said.
That's a good one. So I have a son, my wife and I have a son with profound autism. So that has probably been the biggest change in our lives, I would think. So it's caused us or benefited us to change how we learn our lifestyle and how we help both him and his sister to go forward in life and keep ourselves sane as well. So I think it caused me to be, or us as a family, to be more creative than perhaps we would have intended to be. So I think if I hadn't had him, maybe I'd just be bored to death.
But now you're not.
That's you're right. Not I'm bored. Always entertained. Yeah.
As far as my career goes, I wanted to be a therapist, like a counselor, a family counselor. I went to school to be a, got my degree in psychology, and I was planning on, getting my master's and everything. And out of college, I ended up becoming a behavior therapist for young children with autism. So, three, 4, and 5 year olds, had no idea what autism was, no clue, just completely oblivious. And I was like, this seems like a fun job. And I ended up working with these families and these children. And I was like, I love working with kids, and I love working with families. And that is what just pushed me over into education. Because again, I had no desire to be a teacher. I didn't realize I wanted to be a teacher or anything like that. So just having that exposure and working with children on the spectrum, it was transformative. So yeah, that's mine.
Well, thank you for making those choices and continue to do this work to benefit the community.
Yeah, of course.
We need you.
It's my pleasure. And it was my pleasure to have Michael Bull on the Think Inclusive podcast. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for listening to this preseason bonus episode. I've dropped some links to specific things Michael and I talked about in our conversation. Can't get enough of Think Inclusive? Become a patron and find out what you've been missing on patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast. Finally, follow us on the socials. And if you follow us on Threads, I'm going to post some dad jokes written by AI. Let me know what you think of them. Find us on the web at thinkinclusive.us. And if you want more information about inclusive education or how MCIE can partner with you in your school or district, go to mcie.org/contact. We'll be back next week with our season 11 premiere. Enjoy the rest of your week. And remember, inclusion always works.
MCIE.